Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Western Hunting Hub podcast. If you would, do me a favor. I always forget to ask. If you listen on iTunes, give me a good review, write a little something quick, and then 5 stars, please. That'd be great. Also, subscribe on whatever platform it is or follow. And then I want to give back to you guys for our 100th episode coming up here in just a couple of episodes. And I'd like to get this out to someone before Christmas. So I've got a new Hoyt bow sitting here on my desk. It's brand new in the box, but it's not a brand new model. But it's never been shot. It's still got the pack box and the package all around here. It is a Hoyt Axios. It is a 28 to 30 inch draw, 60 to 70 pounds. Good sharp looking bow. Pretty sure it's got the, I think it's a Kuyu camo on it. I don't have it. It's still in the box. I'm not going to pull it out. But I have that for you, somebody. And the reason why I wanted to do this is it was time for a giveaway, but also I need just a little quick fundraiser just to pay for the Waypoint subscription. We now have that fee. Last year, did a Facebook donation thing, and you guys helped me buy some equipment that I'm currently still using, and it's been making this whole thing work, so appreciate all of you for that. But this year, now I need to help pay for the podcast itself. So just asking for a little favor. And in return this year, you'll be put into a drawing for a bow. If you're enjoying the podcast or and this bow doesn't fit you or you're left-handed, it'd be great. Throw in $20 and take it and give it to somebody. It'd be a really great Christmas gift for somebody. So the ways that you could get into this drawing are donate $20 or $100. I don't care. You can donate as much as you want, but each $20 increment is one ticket into the bucket. And I'm going to go through and do some manual work and put these things actually in a bucket because I don't actually need that many. 60 people would probably take care of it. It'd pay for the bow and it'd pay for the monthly subscription. I think that's right in there. So your odds actually wouldn't be too terrible bad. It'd be about like a Ducks Unlimited banquet when you buy a card out of the 52 card deck. So your chances would be about like that, unless you bought a lot more, and then your chances are pretty good. So not a huge pull or not a huge pool of people, I'm sure, or maybe it will be. I'll be surprised. It'd be great. But we'll get you in your name into the drawing. So you can Venmo me, and I will have the link down below to my Venmo, which is just at Clint Whitley, at CLINTWHITLEY. Or we'll do, I'll put my PayPal link down below, or I'll set up a Facebook donation thing like I did last year. The big thing I need you to do is make sure that your name is attached to it in some way, as well as your phone number or a way to contact you so I can make sure to let you know you won the bow. If you do that contact, I would suggest maybe putting the Venmo on private. Don't make it a public post. So there you have it. We've got a sweet new bow. ready to go out to somebody, but we're going to run this just a month or two and hopefully get that up before Christmas. All right. So anyway, thanks for all you listeners for the last 99 episodes, 98 episodes. And this one is with Dylan Dawson from Onyx. We've had him on before for multiple things with Onyx. So this time we're talking hunting as well as some new features Onyx has coming down the pipe. Thanks. All right, Dylan, thanks for coming on my podcast again. This is probably three or four I think you've been on. So I like the regularity of you joining me here, and it's fun to hear the inside from Onyx. And but thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for having me back. And as you said, it's always good to catch up, especially mid-season, and exchange some hunting stories and talk about what's new going on at Onyx. So happy to be here.
Yeah, and that's really what I've been focusing on quite a bit lately. It's just hunting stories, because that's what we learn from. And I catch some flack here and there for the mistakes made in the field, but I don't care.
I've got plenty of mistakes this year.
Yeah.
And when you start to get, I wouldn't say cocky, but when you start to feel like you're starting to get a few things figured out, particularly in my case for archery elk, you become humbled very quickly.
Yeah. Yep. I am right there with you. Had a pretty rough go there. The tag got filled, but it was a rough deal. So yeah, tell us about, let's walk through your fall so far, what you've had, let's tell some stories.
For sure. So this fall definitely has been different. And we might've even, I can't remember the last time I was on quite how long ago it was, but long story short, I became a father on May 3rd of this year. So first year, having a kiddo at home, and it changes things a little bit as far as time in the field. You know, it's great as we were talking earlier, I wouldn't change anything for the world, but, you're definitely a little more limited, and it was easy for me to say beforehand, oh, you know, by the time September rolls around, we'll be good to go. And I'm, you know, it won't limit me too much and everything will be good, but not always the case. So this year I was and am relying on e-scouting a lot more heavily this year than I ever have, just because I didn't put boots on the ground once before season. I did not hike into an area. I did not glass an area. I didn't even drive up to an area before season, which is a little unusual. So e-scouted pretty hard this year. Which is good to look at things from a different perspective. But when I got to some of the areas that I was e-scouting, I quickly realized so in Montana here, where we've been struggling for moisture, I don't know if they would consider it quote unquote a drought, but it is very, very dry. And I think that's one of the main factors for this year, just not finding elk where I typically find elk, and not e-scouting areas quite effectively once I get boots on the ground. So anyways, limited on time so far, but actually, and to take another step back, a couple of really good buddies of mine drew some great tags this year for rifle. One of them drew a moose tag, a rifle moose tag. One of them drew a mountain goat tag, and another buddy, coworker, Zach Sandow, drew a really good rifle bull tag here in Montana. So a lot of the season also, I shouldn't say a lot, a considerable amount of the season so far has also been with them on their tags, just because I want to help out and be a part of it as much as possible. A couple weeks from now is opener for rifle here in Montana. And then I'm headed out with Zach for his, rifle elk tag for 4 or 5 days on that one. So, you know, it kind of feels like a little bit my tags have been burning a hole in my pocket, but there's still definitely some time, and that's what's nice about Montana with the long seasons. And then if you're not successful in archery, you can pull out the rifle and have a full rifle season. So
yeah,
you've
already got a really nice bull, so it's nice to have go out and
it I should have had another one this year, though.
Oh, shoot.
So I went, basically my elk hunt this year was 1 week. I took 1 week off and went, and typically I would do that in the past, but I would also, you know, do long weekends and even evening hunts and morning hunts and, you know, just stay as local as possible just to get as many hunts in as I can. And I feel like that's always played a huge role in my success. You know, just time in the field and being persistent. And so this year I took 1 week off, and I had a kind of a, it is a special unit, archery elk tag, but pretty easy one, pretty much a guarantee for a resident here in Montana. Went over, had several close encounters, a handful of just shook my head and the, are you kidding me? Like, how did I mess that up? Or how, you know, drawing my bow and the wind switched at the last second, like three of those where you're just like, I don't even know what I would have done differently, but incredibly frustrated. Yeah, on some nice bulls. And I did release an arrow on a very nice 6-point. And he ended up spinning right as I shot and it didn't work out. Ended up watching that bull for 4 or 5 days, tried to get on him several more times. Got to like 65 yards from him in his bed and the wind switched. And so, yeah, lots of very close calls with a couple of really nice bulls. And, you know, you keep replaying those moments in your head and you're like, if I would have shot a quarter second sooner, or if I wouldn't have got up and, you know, moved 5 feet on that stock or whatever, that bull would have came right by me. And, but that's what keeps us going back and keeps it exciting. I mean, definitely a lot of fuel to the fire for next archery season.
And it's those images I know are burned in your brain, like they are mine, of those, that when you get the glimpse of that big rack or whatever it is, turning and bolting or ducking or doing something that's like, that was the last image I saw of it, and that's, it's over. It's gone.
Yep.
So those just are exactly burned into your brain. And
Yeah,
they either fuel the fire or humble you or make you want to just throw your bow.
I would say definitely all of the above.
Right.
This year. There was another one too that I typically never sit on water. It's just not a way that I really like to hunt, but it was incredibly hot. It was like 95 degrees and I didn't really have a plan for an evening hunt. And I was like, well, I know where a water tank is and I know there's elk in the area. I'm just going to try and be patient and go sit and maybe something will come in. I sat down and I think I was there for like 30 minutes. And this is why I don't sit water, because I was there for 30 minutes and I was already bored.
Yep,
I was like looking around and I wasn't real covered where I was sitting. And I was looking around and there was a couple like logs and some branches and whatever. And I was like, well, I've got plenty of time. I'm here a little early. I'll get up and, you know, make myself a kind of a makeshift little ground blind just to be a little more concealed, so I don't feel like I'm sticking out in the wide open when an elk does come in, if an elk comes in. And so this is probably, I don't know, 4:30, 4:45 in the afternoon. Should have known better with how warm it was. But anyways, I leave my bow on the ground, get up and grab a few of them, start making a little makeshift blind. And I heard something. I turned my head and there was probably, he was a nice bull. He's probably about a 300-inch 6-point, at no kidding, probably 20 yards from me, running the direct opposite way. I have no clue how close that bull walked right to me. He was coming right to the water and he was in the wide open. If I had my head on a swivel and was paying attention, I would have seen him. But I was, you know, making myself a ground blind. So that one will definitely be etched in my mind because it was one of those, like if I had just stayed sitting down, you know, and the wind stayed consistent, which I feel like it was, that bull would have walked 15 yards in front of me broadside.
Oh, geez. Isn't that crazy? Like you talk about elk are not quiet. You hear them coming, but then they, when they're just making their way to feed or whatever, but when a bull wants to sneak in somewhere, how the heck does that giant thing with 3-foot wide antlers make it through stuff, or 700-pound animals not step on a stick? How do we not hear that? And
yeah,
you and I are not at the age to where our hearing's going, where we can
shouldn't still be yet.
No, we can still hear that stuff. How are we not hearing those things? That just blows my mind. That story is so common. So common. Mm-hmm. It just blows my mind.
No, I just remember hearing you know, when elk are kind of running sometimes, but they're not like really trying to get out of there. They just knew something was up, and it's almost like they drag their hoofs as they run. I don't know if it's to make more noise or that's just how they, that this particular bull ran, but it really stood out to me, him just like kind of dragging his hooves on the ground as he was running. And yeah, like I said, he was 20 yards when I saw him. So, I mean, that bull could have been under 15 yards from me when he decided that the weird object in camo up grabbing sticks wasn't what he was interested in.
Yeah. A few years ago, I had that with raking a tree, and I literally, my pants were up, but I felt like my pants were at my ankles. Just, I'm raking a tree and my bow is down there, and that giant 6-point with his inlines were just so, I just got it that engraved in my brain of that fourth, fifth, sixth, just like that perfect sequential, getting smaller as they go down to those points, just the beautiful, those points I remember just being really pretty, and he was narrow,
yep,
but just a beautiful looking 300 whatever class bull, and he just caught me at 15 yards, snuck in out of nowhere, that same thing again, not being ready, and I called him in, but it called him in too close, and I quit too late. So
yeah, no, and that the same thing happened to me last year. I was solo, and I was exchanging bugles from a bull at the very bottom of a drainage that I was debating on if he was going to continue to respond. I was going to head down in after him, but it was nasty. So honestly, I was sitting on the edge of a logging road by myself, kind of just contemplating, okay, what's my move? What are the thermals going to do in the next hour? Where's that bull going to go? Do I want to drop down, you know, 1500 feet into this nasty drainage after him right now? And anyways, I bugled, and I'll remember this one forever. I bugled, and then all of a sudden I heard just almost like one tiny little rock move to my left. And so as the bugle tube is still like up to my mouth, I just kind of like slowly turned my head, and he was a small bull, but he was standing there 15 yards just staring at me, watching me bugle.
Holy
and I was
smoke.
Like, how, like, where did he come from? I have no idea. I didn't hear him. It was a rocky old logging road, so I should have heard him walking down the road. But yeah, that was another one where, like you said, my pants were up, but they did not feel like it. And he stood there and stared at me for the longest time, and the wind switched, and that was that. But yeah, all those little, you know, between those, which that's kind of out of your control. I don't usually feel too bad about those.
Right,
but then again, right. I definitely did about like the sitting on water one, because it was just my lack of patience that caused that one. But then there's all those little split second decisions that you make that can make or break your season, like that. The bull I let narrow go on this year, really nice, typical narrow, probably about a 320 bull, excellent, great bull. I mean, I'm happy with any bull with a bow, but this one was definitely, would have been one of the better ones that I had shot, and walked by me at about 30 yards, and I decided to call to stop him, and he didn't like it. You know, if I would have just not called, and maybe he would have stopped and not knowing I was there, and I would have had time, and it would have been great. Or he might have kept walking and walked in my wind, and I wish I would have stopped him. So, you know, all those little decisions that will haunt you, but then also if you do it right, then it makes the hunt.
Yeah. And you know what's crazy is that whitetail hunters would probably laugh at us. We can't sit for 30 minutes or an hour. Or I had Danny Bolton on. I interviewed him yesterday, and that one will be my 100th episode. So that's kind of cool.
That's awesome.
But he was hunting in Idaho, and I don't know if you know who he is, but he was just on the Meat Eater podcast. He was on their Cat Scratch Fever, the one that got super sick from eating raw goat.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, he went to an outfitter of some sort, but he sat in a few different blinds for 10 straight days and sitting over a water hole in Idaho, and nothing. for 10 straight days. He said it was brutal. It's like, I couldn't even do that.
No, no, I have a lot of respect for people who do. I think it's more difficult. I think it's more challenging to sit for even an evening than it is to go hike around and see what you can run into. But, you know, it can be incredibly effective too. I mean, that afternoon, it should have worked for me. You know, who knows? He might have winded me at the last minute or known something was up or whatever. You never know. But it can be effective.
So you were talking, it was early spring, I think, maybe we had talked, but you had mentioned looking into a Colorado hunt. That happened at all? Or going to happen at all this year?
Nope, that one got postponed to next year. Still looking into it, but figured, and I'm glad now that I postponed it. As I said in the beginning, you know, I thought, oh, it'll be the same. I'll have all this time and whatever, which I was humbled a little bit. But yeah, that one got postponed, so that probably, hopefully, fingers crossed, we draw, will be in next year.
What about the goat or moose hunt? Any of those happen yet that you're were jumping on?
Yeah, so my buddy, I was supposed to go on the mountain goat hunt, and plans changed, dates pivoted a little bit. So I wasn't able to go on that one, and he actually tagged out on a nice goat really early in the hunt. So that one, tag's already filled, but I wasn't there. My other buddy's moose hunt, he's actually up right now. The weather here in Montana definitely has switched the past week or so. I'm looking outside and it's kind of raining, snowing. There's some snow up high in the mountains. And the visibility hasn't been very good. So he said the last couple days he reached out last night, had some service. And so the last couple days, been struggling a little bit with weather and visibility. But he's out this week and I'm hopefully going to meet up with him one of these evenings and then this weekend, as well as carry my bow around in case I find a bull on the last weekend of archery here in Montana. And then the rifle elk hunt, kicks off 2 weekends from now. So not this coming weekend, but then the following is opener for that one.
I don't even know. That's just like drawing a goat tag. You're like, I don't know what I'm doing because you don't get to hunt those very often.
Yep.
Like a moose hunt, it'd be one of those, I don't know what I'm doing because I'm not. It's something that is brand new and how to hunt them. You learn how to hunt elk, deer, and bear really well because you can do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But moose, you just back to square one and learning everything. So that's cool that you get to hopefully jump in on a hunt and learn from their mistakes, or at least hear what his strategies are, and then see what works, what doesn't work. So the day you draw one, you got an idea.
Yeah. Hopefully that day comes.
Yeah, you can just tell him he's the unlucky one that drew first. So we have to learn from however you do it.
Exactly. No, that's a good point. Like, we went to Kodiak last year and hunted Sitka blacktail. Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, I figured going into like that one, okay, I've hunted enough whitetail and mule deer, there's going to be some correlations, and there definitely was, but just more so hunting new terrain and new species. By the time your hunt is over, you feel like you're just kind of getting it figured out. You know, you're like, man, if I had another 7 days now after knowing what I know, it would be, you know, a lot more productive. So that's kind of probably the same with a moose, sheep, or goat. You know, not really much experience, but by the end of it, you're like, man, I wish I
could do that again.
I wish I knew then what I know now.
Yep, exactly. So then, what's the rest of the fall look like besides that elk hunt? Elk hunt and moose hunt.
Yep, elk hunt. Hopefully, get on the moose hunt, and then I'm going to try and figure out how to kill a bull elk with a rifle, which honestly will be new to me. I've never shot a bull with a rifle. I've shot a couple cows, but typically it's just archery is for elk. And once rifle season comes, you know, I switch to mule deer. And so this year will be a little different. Going to take some time off and try and find a later season bull with the rifle. I say that, I mean, I do have this weekend still, but that doesn't pan out, it's onto the rifle. And then I usually make it back home to Eastern Montana for the last week of rifle season. And then really that week is all mule deer. Once in a while, we find an occasional nice whitetail that catches my attention and diverts my plan from mule deer. But that's basically a week-long mule deer hunt.
Cool. What little adventures have you taken the little one on? What's because I'm sure you've probably decided to, like, I'm at least going to go do something.
Yeah, for sure. So we, my wife and I actually took him on one elk hunt this year. And when I say elk hunt, you know, we drove around and bugle checked some canyons and walked a little ways from the pickup and glassed and whatever. And he did pretty well. He got a little fussy. He got a little upset on the ride home on the bumpy ride. I don't think he liked that, but it was cool just to get him out. You know, obviously it wasn't going to be a super productive hunt. I did tell my wife, you know, if we get a response down in a drainage, I'll see you when I see you. Right. If you have to, you can run back to the house and do what you need to do. And then come pick me up later or whatever. But it was really cool, honestly, more so for the photos and the memories of just his first hunting trip, if you will. It was definitely worth taking the time to do that and, you know, not going on a more serious hunt for that day. So it was cool.
Yeah. I got a 3-year-old, and this may sound horrible, but I hate going to the playground. Playing with the little toys is fine, but with him, but when he's on my back, chirping my ear off, just talking about whatever, pointing out poop, pointing out this, that is so much fun for me. So much fun. And I'm excited for you to experience it the day when he, right?
Or she, what's that?
You're a little, yeah, yep. You've got a little boy. Yep. When he is talking and saying, you're having conversations that are just so much fun. That is the most rewarding part. And I've got so many plans in the near future of just even a little camping out. I can't wait to camp out with him and do a one day hunt. And whether that's chasing antelope or deer or something like that, that's when I have the most fun with him. Absolutely. And maybe that's me being selfish because we're doing what I like to do, but I don't even care what we, I took him on an antelope hunt and it was a mistake because it was opening day and there was too many hunters out, but I just wanted to shoot it. I had a doe tag and a buck tag, and I really, really wanted to just put something on the ground. I didn't care what, just for him to see that part and be a part of that. And it's just too many hunters. And he now repeats other hunters ruined our shot. The hunters ruined our shot. That's his response to that now. Cause we were actually on a really nice buck. And it was just a matter of the right movements and the right things to come together. And it just didn't, as hunters piled in all around, and just, didn't really care that you were there. And then it was a safety thing of, I'm getting out of here. This is stupid. There's way too many people chasing a few antelope that I have no desire to be a part of. But
yeah, no, for sure. I'm looking forward to those hunts though. You know, just taking them out in, where he can engage and be a part of it and say, no, I think we should go around this way, or, you know, no, let's crawl up and see if we see him, that type of stuff. And honestly, I remember going with my dad when I was, we've got a couple photos where I was like 4 and actively, you know, hunting with him and on some success photos and stuff. And yeah, it's just cool. Hoping he likes it, as much as I do, but, I feel like as long as, you know, I don't burn him out with it or take him, you know, super early on when the conditions aren't awesome or anything like that, I think he'll be into it. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. That's a weird balance of you want him to like it, but you know what?
I can't want him to like it too much.
No. And I keep telling myself, I don't really care what he's into. I just want him to be into whatever he does it the best of his ability. If it's, maybe that is just going to be, oh, God forbid, not basketball, because I was a wrestler. But even if it is basketball, then
I played basketball. So,
yeah, a little difference between the grapplers and the pumpkin pushers.
Exactly. No, I've heard it all.
Yep. Me too. but I don't care if it is basketball, then, but as long as he does it to the best of his ability and that's what he puts his time in and he has an appreciation for the outdoors, that's what I care about. That appreciation is the goal, because he doesn't have to be a hunter to appreciate it and understand what I'm doing. But if it's a part of my life, like it is nonstop, 24/7, hunting is a part of my life, that it's just what we do. It's a part of life.
Yep.
And I think that's just going to come through, because you do the same thing. Your work and your play has very fine lines, and sometimes you can't tell the difference. It's hunting and work, and so.
Yep. No, absolutely. I totally get what you're saying, and like you said, I mean, for us, and speaking for me, I guess it's just something, like you said, it's something we do. There's never like am I going to go out this season, or it's something I've always done and something I do, and just kind of a part of who I am. It's good though. I'm looking forward to a few years from now.
Yeah. So switching gears, having to do a little bit more e-scouting, and I've been sharing a lot of and watching a lot more of, your guys's videos, 'cause there's been some really good tutorials on, and just short clips on, hey, here's a new feature, this is how to use it. What are some of the new things that Onyx have been putting out that are useful for, well, I'm sure it's all useful, but some of those big things that you've really enjoyed using and been helpful?
Yeah, for sure. And like you and I were talking earlier, we're always putting out new stuff, but first and foremost, our biggest, I wouldn't say goal, but what we do ahead of new fancy shiny features is make sure that our data is the most accurate and up to date out there possible. So we're constantly updating states, whether that be new private land boundaries or ownership, or, maybe it was a land swap where something new is in public and then something new is in private, game management unit boundary changes, et cetera. So we are constantly updating every state, as frequently as possible. And then once we get that figured out, I mean, they're separate teams, so it really doesn't compete with each other. But once we get those all updated, then we start working with new features and stuff. And a couple new ones this year that have really came in handy for me is a major update to 3D. So currently it is on the computer. So when you have the phone app, you can go on the computer and view the same map. It's really nice for e-scouting and just looking at things with a bigger picture. And this year we revamped our 3D, made it a lot more user-friendly. It shows 3D definitely better than what it did before. And it's just kind of a new experience. And this year e-scouting, I used that a ton. So you can now put layers on top of it. You can mark waypoints, lines, tracks, whatever, right on the 3D. Of course, all of that data that you put in there transfers seamlessly right to your phone. So when you get in the field, but I would say for me this year, 3D is kind of the biggest one that I found useful. Couple other ones that we've done this year and we're working on quite a bit right now as we speak, but crop data is one of them. And so what that is essentially is it's a layer where you can turn on and off different crops. So for farm crops and ag fields and all that good stuff, you can see actually what was planted last year, whether it be soybeans, wheat, winter wheat, alfalfa, hay, corn, whatever. We've got a ton of those that you can turn on and off. And to be completely honest, originally going into it being a Western hunter, I didn't really see the value in it that I do now. I was like, yeah, this is super great information. probably going to lend itself a little bit better toward the whitetail hunter, you know, sitting over crops, whitetail hunting. But the more that the season has gone on, like where my elk hunt was, we were on public land, but there was some private bordering it and some private around it that had some alfalfa fields. And I was able to go on the app, turn on alfalfa hay, and visually see where those fields were last year. This year they were in the same spots. And then those elk in the nighttime would feed out into the alfalfa fields, and then come back, you know, first light or whatever, and bed on public in the timber. So it was super helpful for that. And I feel like mule deer whitetail hunting will be equally helpful. Even if I'm hunting breaky country that's not egg land, there's a good chance if there's crops around, you know, within a mile or a couple miles even, you know, they're going to head there and eat that. There's no sense eating out of a bunch of sagebrush grass when there's alfalfa half a mile away up the coulee. So, yeah, that one's proven to be a lot more beneficial for the Western hunter than I was originally anticipating. And then, yeah, like I said, we're just working on a lot of new stuff, a bunch of updates for save maps, for sharing content. We're possibly working on some wind direction on the map stuff. And yeah, I'm excited for what's to come for sure. There's quite a bit on the docket.
Yeah. I've got, a new spot that is kind of very similar to that break country with some, I know there's irrigation pivots in the area down below. And so that similar concept you're talking about of, all right, I know these mule deer are going to be feeding down in those fields and making their way back up into the breaks in the morning. So that, yeah, I was looking at that a similar way as a, be interesting to know what exactly planted there. But as a hunter and a user of the product, I was kind of questioning, like, and I know this is secret information and you can't say how you necessarily got it, but it's to the point where I'm like, how accurate is this? How do we yep. know? I didn't know, like, some of that would be public information. Like, how do they know a farmer planted corn this year or last year?
So, yeah, I can't get into it too much, but essentially a lot of it is done on, like, satellite imagery. There's based off of, you know, algorithms or something that somebody a heck of a lot smarter than myself figured out and put together. But, you know, it's new in the sense that nobody, to my knowledge anyways, nobody really has it. So it's kind of something that sets us apart. It's not easily accessible. And so as far as accuracy goes, we tested a lot of areas, had a lot of our ambassadors and people that we know in the industry kind of spot check it. And, you know, everything was good to go on that. The one thing to note with that, though, is they are last year's crop. It's not what's planted currently right now, just because it'd be impossible to get that with the way that we do. So, but a lot of folks who are educated in the matter will know, okay, well, if this was planted soybeans last year, there's a chance it could be this, or kind of understand the rotations on the crops. And so it can be still incredibly helpful on what it can be this year.
Well, and that's probably your main one anyway that you care about is knowing corn versus soybeans. I think that seems to be the biggest decision factor for stand locations or whatever, I would assume. And that's been my experience. And, you know, if they switch from one crop to the next, a turnip to sunflowers or whatever, that's going to be it's still a valuable food source. Would you hunt that any differently? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But corn and soybeans, absolutely. Difference in cover, different food source. Definitely would be hunting that just a little differently. So,
yeah. And so we're working on kind of an extension of this, is some tree data. So, you know, you'll be able to, in the future, be able to pinpoint like a packet, a pocket of aspens mixed in with some other trees. And then also, so it'll show you the tree type, but also the, you know, how mature that forest is. Is it like a stage one, two, or three, and what does that mean? And so that'll be helpful too. And I know for me, I will definitely have to educate myself a little bit more on, you know, what that means. What am I looking for? And it's going to be really interesting because I've got a ton of waypoints for bedding areas and for, you know, feeding areas and for all these things, let's say specifically for elk. And then once we get that data in the app, looking at it in conjunction with the data that I already have, knowing that this was a feeding area, knowing that this is a bedding area because I've been there, it'll be really interesting to see what type of correlations I can make with the data I've collected and then knowing what the tree data is for those particular areas. There might be some patterns that I can educate myself with, and then it'll help me looking for other places to hunt to kind of repeat those patterns. So yeah, that's another one that we're working on right now that you know, nobody really has. So that's a cool one.
I got an idea that this would be kind of cool. Maybe even like a safety thing of if there's any way to turn on your location and share that with a buddy so that you know where they are. And I know there is an app out there that has done that, but you had mm-hmm. to have been in Wi-Fi, and maybe you still do, but like I know I use Find My Phone to know where my wife is all the time, just as a little, okay, I know she's coming home, I know where she's at, mm-hmm. I know she's safe, but it'd be a neat safety thing of being able to check where your buddy's at. It's like, hey, check on you, and you allow them to share points. I don't know. Is that a thing?
It's definitely a thing as far as being talked about, discussed, and being looked into. Currently, until, you know, that either A, technology, or B, you know, we get that figured out, we actually have partnered with Somewhere. So are you familiar with Somewhere?
Uh-uh.
So basically, I'm sure you're familiar with like Garmin InReach, like a satellite communicator. So Somewhere essentially does the same thing, allows you to text, to send messages from anywhere in the world, basically without cell service. And so we have partnered with Somewhere to where you get a discount on the device when you're an elite member to OnX. And then also with that, we're working on some cool things where you can share waypoints while you don't have service.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Okay, so yeah, my InReach, yeah, it's another device. It's heavy. I don't even have one anymore. I had used it for a different job down the road in the past, and it was a big thing, like that old GPS style thing I didn't really use, and
yeah,
because you have OnX, and I had the old chip, and I know you guys still have that, but the old chip that was in my little eTrex Garmin thing, and so I've had those, but now it's just like most people, it's all on my phone. So that'd be a neat piece of technology to have. Pretty neat. And yeah. another thought, just as a, if you're able to turn on locations, is that you wonder, can you turn on locations to allow other people to discover you? So when you're turkey hunting, yeah, I want to let people to know where I'm at with it within maybe a mile or half mile. So you could turn that on just as a hey, I'm here. Please don't come in and shoot me
kind of thing. Yeah, no, that's a good idea, you know, for certain applications.
Because we had that fatality in Colorado this year.
That was horrible. I read about that.
Crazy deal.
Yeah, no, that is a good idea. One I'll pass on. You know, we'd probably have to continuously remind folks to turn it off if they wanted it off, because I know
oh, gosh,
if somebody accidentally did that, we would be of course, to blame that somebody forgot to turn it off and now their secret hunting spot is exposed. But I do like that, especially when you look at hunting with a group, right? So if I'm, you know, if it's, I don't, obviously I, being so new to the father world, I don't know at what point, you know, I'll separate hunting with my kid and whatever, but at some point that's going to happen. And for me to be able to just look on my Onyx and see where he's at and vice versa, exactly. That's going to be great peace of mind and for safety. A, for, you know, like you were just alluding to, shooting in that direction, but B, just in general, you know, if I think we've all been there where you're hunting with somebody and you get back to camp and they haven't showed up for about an hour and a half and you start to wonder, okay, like what's going on? Where are they at? And so to be able to share your location with other folks and look at it and be like, okay, well, I can see his location is making his way toward camp, so we're good to go. Or, you know, he's down in the bottom of this drainage, either A, something happened, or B, hopefully he's cutting up an elk. So, I think the future is going to be really cool with some of those things.
And as we talk about advancements in technology and those crazy, this would be cool kind of stuff, how much do you guys deal with the traditionalists and those conversations? How do you navigate that conversation with those people that say, or even within your company, of how do we keep things, what's fair chase? And
yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's a kind of a moral question, which is going to be different for basically everybody you ask, right?
Yeah.
And so I know we definitely do discuss that a lot as a company. You know, at what point is, you know, when we get to a point in time when technology is so advanced that we might have an opportunity to do this, and this, like, how does that look? Is that something that we feel would be fair chase? Is that something that would, you know, just all sorts of conversations. So it's definitely being talked about. And I think that the biggest thing is, you know, us as a company, us folks who hunt and, you know, have seen it evolve, it definitely is becoming more more techie, if you will. Just weighing our opinions and going from there. But at the end of the day, too, also working very closely, which we currently do with states, FWP and laws and all that good stuff. So, yeah, I don't think it's an issue right now, but it definitely could be in the future. But I'm confident, you know, as a company and as a product we put out, you know, we would do what we can do to help hunters be successful and be safe. But at the end of the day, I believe, you know, like you were alluding to, though, hunting is a little bit of a traditional thing and it needs to stay that way to a certain point.
Right. And it helps that you guys are a company full of hunters. And
yeah,
everybody hunts. You have that discussion. So I could totally see down the road the data being available if you wanted mm-hmm. to request it from state agencies on collared deer. And hey, it's public information, I can request that. Give me the information on that, and you'd be able to pull the data and plug it into something and say, well, I can track this deer myself or something like
yep.
that. I could see that being tempting for certain companies. And as soon as you do that, that's taking away fair chase very clearly, very
absolutely,
clearly.
Absolutely. Yep.
So,
yep.
But yeah, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I got to go on a little quick antelope hunt right now. So I think
I'm jealous. I'm going to get back to work. So, your afternoon is looking a little bit more fun than mine, as far as if you're able to go on an antelope hunt.
Yeah. The beautiful thing about antelope hunting is it doesn't matter what time of day, just go on
exactly. Yeah.
They just seem to never last that long. I like my antelope hunts in the last 2 years just have been so short. So it's probably now time to spend a little more time doing it, looking for a nice buck or something something with a little more mass to it. Cause I've only got a few antelope bucks and under my name. And I want to look for one of those with fence posts on his head. That'd be nice.
The one that you look at and you're like, wow, that's a big antelope. You know, it's kind of like, with antelope and bear, bears, like, you know, you can look at all these antelope and be like, ah, that one's definitely bigger than that one and whatever. But even if you don't really know a ton, you know, when you're out bear hunting, you can look over a lot of bears and be like, oh, I think that's a pretty good bear. But when you see a good one, when it's a really good one, you don't have to be like, I think that's a good bear. You're just like, holy cows. That's a big bear. Yeah, that's the same with antelope that I found too. I mean, I've seen a couple exceptional antelope, you know, in the 80s range probably. And when you see one like that, like, you're not like, man, he's got pretty long cutters. He curls in pretty good. I think he's pretty massive. When you see like a true good one, you're just like, holy cows. yeah. So yeah, no, it's fun. I actually didn't even draw antelope this year, and I should have for sure. Montana's getting a little bit harder. Well, everywhere is getting a little bit harder to draw.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate it, and thanks for your time. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Let me know how the antelope hunt goes, and let's definitely catch up. And hopefully, I've got a few more exciting stories after rifle season.
Perfect. Well, thanks again.
Yep. Thank you.
Ground, this is God's country.
Oh my God!
Every once in a while, it's fun to go like just full blown redneck on these fish. This is like high tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.